Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jāya, Nantakoti Vaishnavinda ki jāya, Namacharya Śrīla Haridas Thakur ki jāya, Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jāya, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gogopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana ki jāya, Vrindavan Dhamma ki jāya, Mathura Dhamma ki jāya, Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma ki jāya, Jagannath Puri Dhamma ki jāya, Gangamai Jamuna Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Maharani ki jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Paskatya Desatarane Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakalpa Jubhischa Kripasanabhi Abhata Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. May 3rd, 2023 in Hawaii, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 13, Further Talks Between King Rahugana and Jetabharata, Text 21. Rajavacha. Aho nir janma kila janma shobanam. Kim janma bis twapir api amusmim. Naya drishi kesha yasha kritatmanam. Mahatmanam va prachura samagama. Raja Uvacha.
Raja Uvacha.
King Rahugana said.
King Rahugana said.
Aho.
Aho.
Alas. Nirjanma. You have you who have taken birth as a human being. Akila janma shobhanam. The best of all species of life. Kim.
Kim.
What need?
What
janma bhi?
Janma.
With birth in a higher species like the demigods and the heavenly planets.
But aparai.
Not superior.
Api.
Indeed. Amusmin. In the next birth.
In the next birth.
Not.
Yet.
Which? Rishikesha Yashaha. By the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Rishikesha, the Master of All Senses.
By the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Rishikesha, the Master of All Senses.
Krita Atmanam.
Krita.
Of those whose hearts are purified.
Maha-atmanam.
Who are actually great souls. Vaha.
Vaha.
Of us.
Of us.
Prachuraha.
Prachuraha.
Abundant.
abundance.
Samagamaha.
Samagamaha.
The association.
Yes.
Srila Prabhupada's translation. King Rahugana said, "This birth as a human being is the best of all. Even birth among the demigods and the heavenly planets is not as glorious as birth as a human being on this earth. What is the use of the exalted position of a demigod in the heavenly planets due to profuse material comforts? There is no possibility of associating with devotees." Srila Prabhupada's purport. Human birth is a great opportunity for self-realization. One may take birth in a high planetary system among the demigods, but due to the profusion of material comforts, one cannot gain release from material bondage. Even on this earth, those who are very opulent do not generally care to take to Krishna consciousness. An intelligent person actually interested in getting free from the material clutches must associate with pure devotees. By such association, one can gradually become detached from the material attraction of money and women. Money and women are the basic principles of material attachment. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore advised those who are actually serious about returning back to Godhead to give up money and women in order to be fit to enter the kingdom of God. Money and women can be freely utilized in the service of the Lord, and one who can utilize them in this way can become free from material bondage. Satam sangam mamavirya samvado bhavanti ritkarana rasayana kata. Bhagavatam 3:25-25. Only in the association of devotees can one relish the glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just through a little association with a pure devotee, one can become successful in his journey back to Godhead. Rajavacha aho nir janma kila janma shobanam kim janma bis twap arar ap yamusmin yaya drishikesha yashakrita manam mahatmanam va prachara samagamaha. King Rahugana said, "This birth as a human being is the best of all. Even birth among the demigods and the heavenly planets is not as glorious as birth as a human being on this earth. What is the use of the exalted position of a demigod? In the heavenly planets, due to profuse material comforts, there is no possibility of associating with devotees." So Rahugana here is in ecstasy. This is the end of this chapter. And he's in ecstasy. He's so happy that he met Jatabharata. Jatabharata changed his life. Turned everything around. Changed his direction. I forget who I was talking to, one devotee the other day, asking a question I've asked for a long time. Why did Jatabharata talk to Rahugana? Jatabharata, in his whole life, had never talked to anybody. He'd acted as if he was deaf, dumb, and blind. And he never really interacted with anybody except very superficially. And here with Rahugana, when Rahugana insults him, he instructs him in transcendental knowledge. And it wasn't because he was insulted. I mean, the dacoits tried to kill him. He didn't interact with them. And this devotee, again, I can't remember who it was, made the point that Jatabharata probably saw something of himself from a previous life in this king, because Jatabharata had been a great king. He'd been a great emperor. He had taken up, of course, spiritual practices very diligently, had fallen down because of attachment to an animal, and now was in this other birth. And so he saw that here's somebody that I can help. Here's someone I can relate to him. I can help him. There's a good possibility of that. And Rahugana is just so grateful. I mean, if we think about it, you know, most religious systems on the planet, even much of the Vedas, are dedicated to going to heaven, to going to the higher planets in this universe. Right? The Muslims, the Christians, that's their focus. The main religions on this planet is Christianity and Islam. And I'd say among the Hindus as well, that the main focus is on going to heaven, enjoying heavenly delights, getting a reward. I mean, it's interesting. There's one Christian writer that Dr. Bruce Wilkinson, I've met him personally and taken courses from him in how to teach based on how God and Jesus teach in the Bible. very good courses. But anyway, he wrote something about how that what we'll enjoy in heaven is directly related to what good deeds we do on this earth. And I thought, yep, that's karma. I thought I probably wouldn't use the word karma because he'd think it was Eastern and not Christian. But he was talking about karma. He was saying, you know, if you believe in Jesus, you go to heaven, but what exactly you'll enjoy in heaven will be dependent on what exactly you do here. Of course, he's thinking you're going to enjoy it for eternity, not just temporarily. But here, Ruhugan is saying, you know, I don't want to go to heaven. I'm happy with my birth here as a human being because I've met you, because I've met a great person. I've met a great devotee, Maha Atmana. I've met a Mahatma. I've met a great person, Krita Atmana. I've met a purified person, a great person like you. And maybe that wouldn't have happened on the heavenly planets. Maybe on the heavenly planets. I mean, here, he's just saying Janma Bhi, in other words, other births. And Srila Prabhupada's understanding that to mean higher births. And most likely, Ruhugan is not talking about like animal births, because he's saying they're not superior, aparai. Those other births are not superior. So he's obviously not talking about animal births, he's talking about heavenly births, and he's saying they're not superior because I've met you here as a human being. I have association with devotees here as a human being, and Prabhupada's added, in the heavenly planets, due to profuse material comforts, there's no possibility of associating with devotees. And we have a number of statements of Srila Prabhupada here, written as absolutes that are actually general statements. Because other places he says that there are many demigods who are pure devotees. So Sanatana Goswami Brihad Bhagavatamrita writes about how the Lord himself is personally present in the higher planets, in various forms, like in Indra's planet, as he visits his Vamandev. As we say, there are pure devotees in the higher planets, and there's a number of places where Srila Prabhupada says how one can go directly from the higher planets back to Godhead. So Prabhupada's saying no possibility is a general statement. I mean, the same, we have this in the purport as well, that that Prabhupada is here talking about generally. Right? He's saying generally, even on this earth, people who are very opulent are not interested in self-realization. That's generally. I mean, we know very opulent people. George Harrison was very interested in self-realization, for example. And we know some very good devotees who are also very material opulent. I mean, we can also say that extreme poverty makes one not interested in spiritual life. That Chanika Pandit says, if you're extremely impoverished, then you have, you know, no good qualities. And Prabhupada would say, if people are hungry, they can't hear philosophy. You know, first you have to feed them, which is similar to Maslow's idea of a hierarchy of needs. That, you know, if you're being bombed and you're starving, you really don't want to sit around and talk about philosophy. Anyway, those are general statements, that great material comforts tend to make people not interested in spiritual life. But it says, so does poverty. So that's general. There are poverty-stricken people who are interested. There are opulent people who are interested. I mean, if we think about the modes, so the scriptures promote sattva-gun, and that sattva-gun is very close to spirituality. But we also have this practical experience that people who are primarily in sattva-gun are often the least interested in spirituality, because Krishna says they become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. So it's not that different of a situation as somebody who has, you know, millions of dollars. But people think, I already have everything I need. I don't need anything. It's something that we ran into. One time, Kalunga and I were on a japa walk in London, and this woman met us and asked for directions, and Kalunga said, well, we're going that way. You can come with us. So she's walking with us and we're chanting japa. And Kalangana tries to convince this woman to chant Hare Krishna. And the woman said, I don't need to pray right now. Everything's fine in my life. So that tendency is there. If we're suffering very much, we tend not to be spiritually interested. And if we're enjoying very much, we tend not to be spiritually interested.
those things are there. But I don't see that as the main point of this verse and purport. Because, first of all, those are general statements. They're not absolute statements. And it's really not... You really can't look at a particular individual and say whether suffering or opulence, poverty or opulence, or birth and earth or birth on the heavenly planet will be more favorable for a particular individual. Each of us are going to find a favorable situation in different circumstances, just like the story of Gajendra in the water, where the crocodile was getting food and the elephant wasn't. What's a favorable situation for one person may be unfavorable for another. And there are many people on the earth planet who are not achieving spiritual life, and many people on that, many beings, whatever they are, on the heavenly planets that are achieving spiritual life. So I see this verse in purport to be much more about being grateful and using things properly than just about putting down the demigods and glorifying the earth planet. I mean, there's other places where Prabhupada really condemns, where he'll say, you know, if you want to, you can take birth again on this wretched planet with its planning commission. You know, or he'll say, do not take birth again and again in Kali Yuga. And Prabhupada ends this purport near the end, talking about that opulence such as money and women are a huge stumbling block. However, if you use them in Krishna's service, if women are engaged in Krishna's service, if your relationship with your spouse, etc., is used in Krishna's service, if your money is used in Krishna's service, then it's not a stumbling block. So I'd like to look here more at Rahugana's attitude, as they have this little saying, to have the attitude of gratitude. He's grateful. Instead of buying into the general religious concept that I need to go to heaven, he's grateful for his present position. We can also look a little bit about how the demigods can be grateful and humble. We're looking at gratitude and humility, which are very intertwined, and then we'll look a bit about how we can develop gratitude and humility. So Rahugana is grateful for being a human being. He might have been, he probably was, before meeting Jadabharata, focused on going to higher planets. Now, Krishna says to Arjuna, happy are the Kshatriyas for whom such fighting opportunities come unsought, opening for them the doors of the heavenly planets. It was probably the mood he was in. I'm going to be a good, righteous king. Maybe I'll die on the battlefield in glory, and I'll go to heaven. Again, that's what the majority, vast majority of religious people are thinking. And now he doesn't care about going to heaven. He's attained a high level of self-realization, of transcendental knowledge. And therefore, he's like, wow, I'm satisfied to be who and what I am. I mean, a human on earth is extremely insignificant in comparison to a demigod in terms of beauty, youthfulness, power, health, material facility, intelligence, situation in sattva. I mean, practically the demigods are naturally, to some extent, Krishna conscious. They have great, unbelievable powers, like when Bali Maharaj is attacking the heavenly planets, the demigods all take different forms according to their desires and go wherever they want. Travel to other planets, you know, as birds or whatever they can want to do. Oh, we can't do that. You know, we can hardly change our, you know, to change our form, we have to use makeup or use clothing that has padding here or, you know, elastic there, or we have to get some surgeon to cut us up. Our clothes get dirty, our bodies stink, right? The demigods described in the Bhagavatam, they smell nice for 80 miles around, whereas we have to buy, you know, we have to shower often, and then we have to buy deodorant, and even then, if it's really a hot day and we work hard, we're going to stink. Our breath stinks, you know, everything. Our clothes stink. Demigods don't need to do laundry. Their clothes don't get dirty. They don't sweat. They don't need to blink their eyes, you know. They can just eat food cooked in ghee. If we do that, we'll get a stomachache. You know, I think of it like the human body is kind of like a trailer, like a recreational vehicle, and a demigod body is like an actual home. You know, I don't think they poo and pee like we do either. So it's a very exalted body, but Rahugan is like, hey, I've met a pure devotee here. I've met a great soul. Because that's the essence, really. The essence is Prabhupada's quoting Satam Prasamgo Mamavirya Samvido Bhavanti Rakarna Rasayanakata. The essence of spirituality is to meet great souls. Without meeting great souls, we can't even know that there is spiritual life. We can't know the details of spiritual life. We can't know the process of spiritual life. We can't get help in our process. We can't get an example of it. We can't really get anything. When it's very hard to get the mercy of the Lord. Without the mercy of the devotees, it's possible, but it's very difficult. And just a little association, as Prabhupada says here, just a little association. We have the lava matra, sarvas, shastra koi. Lava matra, sarvas siddhi hoy. So just with sadhu sangha, lava matra, just an 11th of a second association with the sadhu. All the shastras say you get all perfection. It's such a powerful, powerful thing. I mean, what Jada Bharata is saying reminds me a lot of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song. Kita janma hai jata tuva das. Barhyamukha brahma janme nahiyas. And he's saying, Kita janma hai, I'm happy to be an insect. Kita janma hai jata tuva das. Barhyamukha brahma janma nahiyas. I'll be an insect if I can be with a devotee. Not even a human being. I mean, here Rahugan is saying rih, which means a human being. Bhaktivinoda doesn't even care if he's human. It's like, I can be an insect if I can be with great devotees. Bhukti Mukti Siddha, who are free from bhukti and desires for bhukti and mukti, and if I become a Lord Brahma who's averse to you, I'm not interested. A very, very similar sentiment. I don't want opulence, material facility, power, if I'm not going to be a devotee. And if I'm going to be a devotee, and I'm going to be with other devotees, then I can be anywhere. You know, in our human life on this planet, it's very easy to lose sight of this opportunity. Human life is hard, and this is a tough planet. Prabhupada calls it a wretched planet. It's the lowest of the middle planetary systems. I like to think of it that in a city, you know, there's where the rich people live, where the middle class people live, where the poor people live, and you know, it's like we've just crossed into the neighborhood of the middle class. Just got out of poverty to be on this planet. And then in Kali Yuga on this planet, it's particularly wretched. The weather is not favorable. Everything is polluted. You know, Rameshwar said, Prabhupada, if there's another war, it'll be a nuclear war and everything will be polluted. And the crops won't grow. And Prabhupada said, everything is already polluted. We live here. So everything's polluted. Our bodies are all full of plastics. And unbelievable. You know, there's garbage. There's practically more garbage in the ocean than there are fish. The air is terrible. You can't drink practically any of the natural water. You go to a river, a stream, you can't drink it. The soil's full of contaminants. Practically all the food we eat is full of contaminants. It's pretty hard to live a pure life. I mean, some places, you know, a lot of you are in Hawaii. Some places in Hawaii or in New Zealand, you know, if you go to some island away from everything. But even then, you know, you're still going to get contaminants, right? It's a wretched planet. And then the human body, I mean, hey, you know, it's not a very nice body. It's very fragile. It doesn't take much. Any of us who've ever broken a bone, you know, doesn't take much to really be injured and be at least temporarily disabled, you know. I broke my foot once, broke my wrist a few times when I was a kid. I broke a toe twice. You know, you just get some disease. Very easy to get some disease and you're incapacitated. I mean, we don't live very long in Kali Yuga. You know, kind of you just blink a few times and your life's over. We don't have a long youthful period of life. Like Prabhupada would say 50 to 40. You know, by 40, you start having symptoms of aging. And, you know, by the time you're 60, if you die, nobody's surprised. know, if you live to be 80, you're really old, 80, 85. And it happens almost instantly. And old age is, it's tough. You know, your seeing ability goes down, your hearing ability goes down, your digestive ability goes down, your immune system goes down. Your bones start falling apart. Your blood doesn't flow properly. I mean, everything just like, just is a mess. So, so we might focus easily on the difficulties of a human body because, after all, there are many. And they're, sorry, and they're not trivial. It's not like, you know, that it's inconsequential. And we could complain. I remember having neighbors in Detroit who were probably as old then as I am now. They were mostly complaining about their different things with their body and all the doctors they were seeing. Or, you know, the mind gets less sharp as well. But instead, we can be grateful. And of course, we can be grateful for so many things, whatever physical, mental abilities we have, whatever friends we have, whatever nice food we have to eat. And that's worthy. Gratitude is one of the 14 items of knowledge. The Panchatantra say that the worst person is an ungrateful person. Gratitude is one of the 64 qualities of the Lord. It's one of the qualities of a pure soul. So just to be grateful even for the tiny, tiny things, you know, there's enough rain, there's sunshine, there's something decent to eat, whatever. But the main thing to be grateful for is the opportunity of the association of saintly persons, the opportunity to associate with great souls. And if we have that, then we really don't need to aspire to change our situation, because that is the greatest wealth. I mean, we might have some desire for more opulences, you know, bhukti and mukti, whatever, but really the greatest, the greatest enjoyment and the greatest liberation is found in the association of devotees, and that's the main thing to be grateful for. Sometimes it's hard to be grateful for that. I mean, Rahugana's first interaction with Jed Bharata was not pleasant. He insulted Jed Bharata, and Jed Bharata responded by kind of counter-insulting him, and, you know, telling him that he wasn't really a king, and he, you know, what he was saying was all rubbish. Reminds me of how Krishna spoke to Arjuna when Arjuna accepted him as guru. And sometimes when we are associating with saintly persons, they give us instructions that are difficult. Sadhu means to cut. They may say things that are not pleasing to our conditioned concepts. They may tell us that it's not good for us to do the very things that we enjoy doing the most. Just like when Prabhupada's godbrother told Lord Jetland to follow the four Rayleigh principles, and Lord Jetland said, oh, I can't do that. First Lord Jetland said, I want to be a brahmana, fine. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling. Oh, can't do that. That's impossible, he said. So, you know, the sadhu may tell us things like that, but we don't want to hear. And then because this is a personal reality, reality is personal. Reality is not impersonal. So great souls have their personalities. That means they have their way of being. They have their opinions. They have their tastes. It's not that a great soul is some kind of one-size-fits-all generic template. And the, you know, personalities means they have idiosyncrasies. They have things about them which may be annoying to other particular people. Just the way of being a person. I mean, we think about the Pandavas, and each of them had their own unique personality, and there were aspects of their personality that were annoying to their brothers and to their wife. I mean, just what it is. And so sometimes when we're, what to speak of, or we're associating with people that are not fully on the platform of Krishna Prema. We're in a society of devotees, and some of the devotees are struggling with Bhajana Kriya. And they're struggling with Anartha Nivritti. And so we're still going to see so many faults in them. Like Prabhupada talks about, don't criticize someone in the shower for being dirty. So we're definitely going to find, you know, so many difficult things. Even with pure devotees, there's going to be things that about their personality that we find difficult. It's just the way it is. And what to speak of people who still have an artist, so we're going to see some selfishness in them, we're going to see something egotistical and so forth. So we may not always be grateful for the association of devotees. We may not always see the benefits we have. Sometimes we don't really see it until we're away from it. You know, you don't know what you've got till you've lost it, sort of thing. And maybe if we're visiting some materialistic relatives, or we're going to a job where everybody's very materialistic, and then we say, wow, what I have with the devotees is really special. Even some devotees that, you know, still have some anarthas that I may find annoying, or some personality quirks that I may find annoying, whatever. You know, I mean, or some cultural conditioning that I may find annoying. You know, each of us have some particular ways of acting according to our particular culture. I mean, I remember in New Zealand where devotees were telling me something and they were being so diplomatic that I couldn't understand what their meaning was. It took me like 2 hours to understand what they were trying to say. It was just really difficult and aggravating. So, you know, there's different cultures and different personality types and different kinds of anarthas, and maybe some devotee has an anartha that I've never had in this life, and maybe my anarthas are different from theirs, and so forth, and we may lose our gratitude. You know, I know people who rarely, they're devotees, but they rarely associate with other devotees because they find themselves just getting critical and annoyed of the other devotees. But we need to be grateful. It's easy even for material things to focus on the negative in our life. It's really easy. I give you just such a simple, mundane example that I don't particularly like doing laundry. I like having clean clothes, but I don't particularly like doing laundry. And, you know, as Hare Krishna devotees, we wash our clothes a lot, and so laundry is an ever-present, continual part of our lives. And so it's time to do laundry, and so my mind can complain and say, oh, why do I have to do laundry? But instead I can be grateful. I can be grateful that I have enough clothing, that I can do laundry and still have things to wear. I can be grateful that I have a washing machine so that I don't have to do laundry by hand. I can be grateful I have a place to hang up my laundry. I mean, so many things that I can be grateful for in respect to doing laundry. I can turn it around. And the same is true with almost anything in our life. You know, even just the ordinary stuff of life. You know, oh, I have to make my bed. Oh, I'm so grateful I have a bed. I'm grateful I have blankets. You know, whatever it may be. Oh, I got to walk in the rain. Oh, I'm so grateful there is rain. I'm grateful we get enough rain so that the plants can grow, so we have enough water to drink. So the same is true with the devotees. When devotees, you know, when other devotees irritate us or frustrate us or whatever, or disappoint us, to say, I'm so grateful that I have an association with devotees. I'm so grateful there's people I can talk to about Krishna, that I can talk to about transcendent philosophy that can help me and support me in my own spiritual journey. Because it's the greatest wealth in the universe. Better to be in the human life on this lowest of the middle planets in Kali Yuga and have the association of devotees than to be some great demigod with all power and all opulence and all beauty and all youth and not have the association of devotees. But, you know, the demigods are also grateful. And we find this, there's a verse in the Bhagavatam where the demigods say that, you know, they're looking forward to birth on the Earth planet. The demigods, being primarily in Sattvaguna, are generally is the operative word here, they're generally humble and grateful. That's part of what Sattvaguna is about. They don't have a view that, you know, well, now I've made it to the heavenly planets and now I'm better than everybody else. Now I'm better than those stupid humans on Earth. That's not how they think. They're thinking, oh, the human life is glorious, more glorious than our life. Of course, you know, demigod life is much more glorious than life on the Earth planet in general. But the demigods are humble, and they're thinking like that. That's part of why they're demigods. And they also have gratitude. Again, there are great devotees among the demigods, that they have gratitude that they can use the facility of their planet to serve the Lord. They're grateful that they can help the devotees on the other planets. And this quality of being grateful actually involves humility. You can't really be grateful unless you're humble. So it's not that King Rahugan is saying, I'm better than the demigods. It kind of could sound like that from this verse, but that's not true. Because without humility, gratitude is impossible. Then this verse wouldn't be gratitude, it would be arrogance. And that's an impossible interpretation of this verse, considering the character of Rahugana and considering what's happening in this particular story at this point. So why do we say gratitude and humility have to go together? Well, if you're arrogant, you feel entitled. If you're arrogant, you think that you deserve everything. And therefore, if you get what you think you deserve, you don't feel grateful for it. It's just what's supposed to be there. I mean, most of us have some arrogance in regard to some things. Like, I tend to believe that I deserve air to breathe. You know, and I deserve water to drink. It's hard to remember to be grateful for that. To say, wow, I'm grateful that I can breathe air. I'm grateful that I have clean water to drink. It's hard. Why? Because of a lack of humility. A sense of, you know, I deserve this. One's not going to be grateful for the association of devotees if one thinks, well, of course I should have the association of devotees. It's what I'm due. It's what I deserve. And then when you get less than what you think you're due, then you're going to be angry. You know, the vast majority of our frustration and difficulty is due to a lack of humility and gratitude, even on a material level. You know, if a man comes home from work and his wife's made him a 15-course meal and cleaned the whole house and done the laundry, but if he thinks, well, that's just what my wife is supposed to do. I'm her husband. I have a right. It's my right to have all this. And he forgets that she's doing it voluntarily. That's what she should do. It's what she must do. And he doesn't feel any gratitude for the meal and the clean house and the laundry. And therefore his ability to enjoy it is very small. And this is true just materially. I think I became aware of this really at my 45th birthday, when the devotees where I was living here in North Carolina at the time threw a huge surprise party for me. Completely unexpected. And it was so unexpected, and I had no sense at all of deserving it or expecting it. My sense of gratitude was very deep. I was kind of overwhelmed with gratitude for the devotees doing something to me that was far, far beyond anything that I had even considered anyone would do. And therefore, I felt such joy. And I've had the opposite situation, where I think I'm entitled to something, and then when I don't get it, I'm angry, I'm irritated, I'm frustrated. You know, and so gratitude, humility and gratitude give our whole life a sense of joy. So how are we going to cultivate this? How are we going to cultivate humility and gratitude? Well, first of all, to understand that when we are experiencing humility and gratitude, that we become happy, and when I'm not experiencing that, I become miserable. I mean, first to understand that as like a basic principle. Not only happy and miserable mentally, but even physically. Grateful people are healthier. Critical, complaining people are sicker. And there's a whole science behind that, but it's just plenty of medical evidence. So mentally happier, physically happier, humble and grateful people are more liked by others. You know, entitled, complaining people, you know, the people don't want to be around them. And ultimately it pleases Krishna. Those were material reasons. But ultimately it pleases Krishna. Trinadapi Sunichena. Mahaprabhu is telling us to be more humble than a blade of grass. And as I said in the beginning, this gratitude, it's one of the 14 items of knowledge. It's one of the qualities of God. It's one of the qualities of the soul. Just like ordinary other human beings don't want to be around someone who's ungrateful and arrogant, so neither does God. I mean, Krishna really doesn't want to be around ungrateful, arrogant people. How many of us want to be around ungrateful, arrogant people? Have you ever dealt with it? It's kind of awful. Right? So it's part of our pleasing Krishna. We can say legitimately that if we take up bhakti and attain to prema bhakti, then we'll naturally manifest both gratitude and humility as side products. But the cultivation of gratitude and humility, not for their own sake, so much not because we want to just be happier and healthier, but because we want to please Krishna, is also part of our sadhana. In fact, and I bring this up frequently because once I figured it out, I was, as they say in the UK, gobsmacked by it. Or as my granddaughter would say, my mind was blown. That Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Bhajana Rahasya equates the different stages of bhakti in Shraddha to Prema with different verses of the Shikshastika. And he equates Nishta with Trinadapi Sunichena. I found that particular equivalence extremely significant on a practical level. That if we want to go from struggling with our anartas to being steady in bhakti, one of the biggest questions anybody asks in the world, how do I become steady in my bhakti? If we want to go from struggling with our anartas to steadiness in bhakti, the key is humility. And again, humility and gratitude are they're like conjoined twins. If you're humble, actually humble, not fake humble, if you're really humble, you will feel grateful, and you can't feel grateful without being humble. It's impossible. Arrogant people will not feel grateful. And truly humble people, one of the prime symptoms of a very humble person is that they're grateful for all the little things and all the big things. So we can practice this. And going at it from the point of view of gratitude is often a lot easier than trying to hit it from the platform of humility. In other words, if you try to practice being grateful by starting with trying to be humble, that may be harder than if you just say, well, I'm going to practice being grateful. Practicing being grateful is very straightforward, and it's very easy. And it can become a habit. And as you practice gratitude, you'll naturally engender humility. Again, you just cannot be grateful without being humble. Impossible. It's diametrically opposed. And so, like, it's been now well over 3 years that I've been keeping a gratitude diary every day. Just 2 minutes, I write in it, what have I been grateful for today? And it changes things. You start going through your day looking for, what can I be grateful for? What can I be grateful for? And throughout the day, to just make a habit, make a practice. Especially when one notices one's mind complaining about something. Or criticizing something. Oh, why do I have to have a human body in Kali Yuga? All right, what can I be grateful for about having a human body? I'm grateful I don't have an animal body. I'm grateful I have a life on this planet so soon after the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. I'm grateful for my connection with Srila Prabhupada. I'm grateful for having information about Krishna. I'm grateful for the association of devotees. I'm grateful for the association of devotees. And it's a question of practicing it. And as one practices it, it becomes more and more natural, because ultimately it is natural. Gratitude and humility are the natural parts of the soul. And as we practice these things, we'll find that going through an Arjuna Vritti to steadiness becomes so much easier. It's kind of the lubricant. I mean, not only to Nista, Sanatana Goswami has Narada and Uddhava explaining to Gopakumar in the spiritual world in Dwarka that you can't attain to Vrindavan without total humility. And again, total humility means total gratitude. They're intrinsically linked. If we think of the verse Tatenu Kampam Sukshamikshamanu, we also see this link. A person is suffering and they're saying, you know, more obeisances to the Lord. So in humility they say, well, I'm suffering because I deserve to suffer. I've done something wrong, therefore I'm suffering. God is fair. And then also grateful, more obeisances to the Lord. Lord, whenever you want to show me your mercy, I'm waiting here patiently. And I respect you more and more and more. So this is the means by which one progresses from being an external religious practitioner to actually becoming a truly religious and spiritual person, to actually becoming an enlightened person, to break out of the external regimen of I should do this ritual and that ritual, and to come to a deeper life. This is the key here, is humble gratitude, grateful humility. And again, it can be practiced. It can be part of a sadhana. It's meant to be part of our sadhana, to have this mood that King Rahugana has. And you know, Rupa Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur are very, very clear that a desire for bhakti and mukti, a desire for the heavenly planets, is going to be an impediment to attaining pure devotional service. So this humble gratitude here in this lovely verse today is a good indication how we can free ourselves from those desires. You know, for a conditioned soul, those desires are natural, especially on this earth planet. Life is, as we were talking about earlier, it's hard, especially in Kali Yuga. Life is hard. Life is miserable. There's so many difficulties. There's so many obstacles. There's so much pain, physical, mental, emotional, relationship. You know, you can pretty much assume that any human that you pass by at this shop or in the street or anyone you know has some hidden story of suffering that you may not even know about. People's story of the pain and the trauma that they've been through in various ways. You know, it's hard. But if we can't cultivate this grateful humility, then we just see the benefit in it. We just feel so blessed. Wow, I'm really blessed that I have a human body, that I have that I have sadhu sangha, that I have this opportunity. And then the whole world becomes beautiful. It all becomes happy. You know, to what extent we experience miseries as miseries depends, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 6:20, entirely on our consciousness. And so if we have this consciousness, we'll lose interest in the heavenly planets and liberation. We won't be distracted by that. We'll be mentally healthier, physically healthier, and we'll transcend the material miseries. We just won't be aware of them. They won't be significant for us. And the more and more we can do this, to get to a point where we lose all arrogance and all sense of entitlement, and then have a sense of deep gratitude, even for the things that other people see as miseries, then there's no more material world. Prabhupada says, for the great devotee, there's no material world. And they just see the hand of Krishna everywhere, as he writes in the 1515 purport, God is all good, God is all merciful. So this is the mood that Rahugana has in this verse, that he says, I've got the best birth, and better than the demigods, because I've met you. So that's, I should feel that the Lord has given me the best. what did Bhakti Tirtha Swami would say? Best, blessed by the best. We're blessed by the best. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions?
Well, I put my hand up. Nobody else said anything.
Oh, Kandita was talking about being grateful for whatever health facility we do have. That's very important. Yes, Ramananda Prabhu.
Whenever I read verses like this, I feel a little guilty that, you know, as you know, I was in Detroit for many years, and then I came to Hawaii and been here for many more years. When we're talking about, like, heavenly planets, really, it's always seen that this is a very advantageous to spiritual life. And in a similar way, you know, I came to a place that's got much better weather, much better people. It's like a happier, better place for sure. Would you say, in your opinion, does that mean that I have sacrificed my spiritual life?
Oh my goodness. It's so funny you asked that, because I was just teaching a Bhakti Shastri class on the weekend, and there it's described how Vyasadeva, for his meditation, he finds this beautiful place. And sounds to me like Hawaii. And he finds this beautiful place to meditate. And Prabhupada says it's absolutely required if you want to engage in spiritual life to have a nice place. And what we were talking about in the class was that, well, it's not absolutely required. Like with the story of Chitraketu, it says the devotees can be happy in heaven or in hell. But you know what? Prabhupada's very clear that if you can, you find a beautiful, peaceful place. I mean, to be in a place where the weather is nice. I mean, look, in Hawaii, you could really, like, live in the forest. I remember when I lived there was one devotee who, before joining the movement, had spent a year just being intentionally homeless. You know, she said she gained weight living on avocados and coconuts and just taking a bath in the rivers or the oceans, and the river waters are pure there. So in general, an atmosphere like Hawaii is much more conducive to spiritual life than someplace like Detroit. I mean, we're really in Detroit just for preaching. So that's why I was saying that, you know, these statements are general ones. If we're going to say that people with opulence are not interested, people with great poverty are not interested either. The point is more, be in a favorable position for you as far as possible, and then use your situation in Krishna's service. I mean, a little formula that I personally come up with is put 10% of your energy into fixing up your situation and 90% of your energy into being Krishna conscious in whatever situation you're in. Now, obviously, we don't want all the devotees to move to Hawaii. First of all, it would overcrowd the island, and second of all, you know, we want to preach in the rest of the world. But yeah, I mean, sure, if you can have it. And if you can't live in a place like Hawaii, then it's nice, whatever place you have, to make it clean and beautiful, you know, to have fresh flowers, fresh herbs, if you can have cows. You know, surround yourself with nature. I mean, these are the, like Prabhupada said, one of the purposes to bring the members of society closer to each other for teaching a simpler, more natural way of life. You know, it's a lot easier to have a simpler, more natural way of life if you're not in an extreme climate. If you're in some place where you can grow things.
Okay.
So forth. Is that right?
I know that where I was in the Dhritarashtra temple, that was like really necessary, and I felt a little guilty about leaving it and like that, but oh, it was so miserable. Even though the temple, of course, was very nice, but my God, the atmosphere. Oh.
So, but for, you know, there may be some other people for whom that temple is the right place, because that's where they have their preaching activities and that's where they're able to really be in Prabhupada's mission. So, as I said in the beginning, it's really individual. You know, the crocodile's happy in the water, the elephant's dying in the water. And we can make some general statements that the most conducive place has clean air, clean water, clean land, you know, can grow food all year round, and you can eat food that's grown in season and local and organic, and you can drink milk from cows that are right there in your yard or right next door, and you're with the... I mean, that's the most favorable. We can say that, just strictly speaking. Which is very much like saying that the heavenly planets are the most favorable, frankly. Prabhupada said Hawaii was like something like a heavenly planet or like the Earth in other yugas. And so those statements say to us that a heavenly situation is more favorable, because in many ways it is. But there's ways in which a difficult situation is more favorable. Put 10% of your energy into making your situation favorable according to you and your needs and your psychology, and 90% of your energy into becoming Krishna conscious and grateful and humble in whatever situation you're in. What a waste of time and energy, mental energy, physical energy, in always thinking we should be in a different situation. Whether we should be in a different situation materially or spiritually. And, you know, the only perfect situation spiritually is the spiritual world. There's no perfect situation in the material world for spiritual life. There's no perfect situation in the material world for material life. And there's no perfect situation in the material world for spiritual life. So, yeah. Is that all right?
Can I just say something quick to that?
Of course.
I was staying in Los Angeles for several weeks. I got asked to clean some of the paintings in the temple room that had gotten soiled with black soot from incense smoke and pilgrims touching them. But towards the end of that, and I was nearing going back to Hawaii, there was one god sister that just angrily marched right up to me and said, "When are you going to get serious and move back to Los Angeles and engage in devotional service? Get out of Maya, get out of Hawaii, and come back and be a devotee."
Oh my God.
I couldn't believe it, and I just, Hare Krishna, you
know. People are really funny.
I didn't even want to say anything, because they're... Yeah, there's devotees that just think, I guess we just all sit around and on the beach, and that's all there is.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that's all we ever do in Hawaii.
And it's,
but, you know...
No, there's suffering here.
Of course, there's suffering
here. Death, disease, there's a drug addiction, there's homelessness. People are struggling just to survive, you know, here. It's gotten too expensive to live, especially in Honolulu, and you know, it's just not—it's not the heavenly planets.
No, but I mean, come on, it is definitely nicer to live in Hawaii than to live in Los Angeles. I mean, there's no question about it. You know, I've been here in North Carolina for the last 3 years, and it's very beautiful here. It's country, and it's the air is very clean here. Very nice people, good facility here. But there's no question that Hawaii is a nicer place to live. You know, but that's not the point. The point is, what am I doing with it? Like Prabhupada talks about in today's purport, where he says that money and women are a big stumbling block, and he said, then use them in Krishna's service. That's the point. The point is, am I seeing the benefits in what I have? Not am I trying to just change my situation all the time, but am I seeing, how can I use living in Hawaii in Krishna's service? How can I use living in LA in Krishna's service? How can I use living in Florida in Krishna's service? How can I use living in Hungary in Krishna's service? How can I use whatever intelligence I have, whatever beauty I have, whatever money I have, how can I use that in Krishna's service, whatever health I have? That's the mentality, and just be grateful. If you live in Hawaii, be grateful you live in Hawaii. My goodness.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know,
I mean, if you live in L.A., be grateful you live in L.A. I live in a place where Prabhupada spent a lot of time. Same with Hawaii, of course. I mean, there's so many things to be grateful for in whatever we have. And goodness, criticizing other people that where they live means that they're in Maya. Nothing further to say about that. I mean, well, there is something further to say about that. It reminds me, you know, my first years in the Hare Krishna movement, we thought Kanista, Majjhima, and Uttama were according to geography. So if you slept in the temple building, then you were an Uttama. If you slept in a building across the street from the temple, you were a Majjhima. And if you slept down the block, you were a Kanista. I mean, we actually thought like that. Yeah? You remember?
Right. Yeah.
We thought, you know, if you live in the ashram with nothing, with one sleeping bag, you know, and a box of stuff, then you're a great devotee. Okay, I have to go now. Hare Krishna.
Oh, sorry.